Welcome back, everyone, from your Thanksgiving break. We are the Free Basketball Podcast, part of the Lead Sports Podcast Network. Bow, 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 bow. Bow, 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 bow. Waiting on Cody to join in on that. But no. There it is. So hope you like and subscribe. There's a lot of great shows on our network. So please subscribe to that. We got stuff going on every day of the week. But we hope everyone had a good Thanksgiving holiday. We are back. It has been basically 18 to 20 games for every NBA team so far. So I thought it would be a good time to do a first quarter review since we're towards the tail end of this. So a lot of these are going to be general questions and then kind of expectations based. And obviously at the end, we're going to give you what we think or one big prediction from each of us for the second quarter. So, of course, I'm here with Daniel and with Cody. Hope you gentlemen had a great holiday weekend. Let's get into some basketball here. So for the first 18 to 20 games, I do have a general question. And I'm going to ask Cody, this is for you first, because you obviously work different hours than all of us. You're a very busy person. So I just want to know, have you actually been interested by the first 18 to 20 games of the NBA season so far?
I have.
What about the first 20 games have you been interested by?
Well,
just that it's back or certain things like the Warriors being awesome. The Suns,
the Warriors, you know, is fantastic. Games. It's been a great, I love, you know, Steph Curry is a delight to watch. It's been fun. Those games are also typically later games, West Coast team. So I tend to catch those. So that's been exciting. Also, it's just exciting watching basketball that doesn't involve people just, oh, you jumped up in the air. Now let me like,
I'm Amen. Shooting free throws.
Now let me like lurch into you like in some, I don't know, that I hate that crap. Like I get it if it's like you're actually trying to shoot, but sometimes it's just,
most of the time it's just trying
to trick stick your ass defenders. Out in the air to like hit the defender so that they foul you. Like if you have to get the guy to foul you in the ass while you're trying to shoot, like that's a problem.
Yeah. Daniel, same kind of question to you. Have you actually been interested by it, or is it just every regular season start to you? Just get me to the playoffs.
Yeah, so I've been more excited this season about NBA basketball, and I think it is, such as what Cody was talking about, I like the style of play. It's not, you know, the diva era, in all honesty, like it's not where, you know, James Harden is jumping up and Trae Young's jumping up and just shooting free throws over and over and over again. That's been very annoying in the past, and that's not my style. But also, you know, we're watching a league where, you know, the East is now coming on, and now it feels like it's kind of evening out a little bit, where it's, you know, top heavy East, top heavy West, and there's literally eight good teams in each conference that I'm not saying they can win the championship, but they can actually be really good contenders and win a first round series. I think you could say that for both sides, that there are really good teams in both conferences. So that's exciting because it's good NBA basketball.
Yeah, it is interesting because it feels like everybody wants parity. And we know every time we get to the NBA playoffs, there's really no such thing as parity. It's right. Always a one or a two seed making it to the Eastern or Western Conference Finals. It just is what it is. Like if you're a top four seed in the NBA, you have a high probability of making the conference finals or at least the finals. But I think you've hit that nail right on the head with that, Daniel. You have six teams in the East right now with 13 plus wins. And on the West side, the top two teams, I mean, you got the Suns who have won, 15 straight, and the Golden State Warriors who are 18-2. And then everyone else in the West, there's like six other teams with 10 plus wins. So everyone seems to be kind of even right now.
Yeah.
So my question about the parity would be, Dana, I'll follow up with you on this. Do you think it's actual parity of the teams are more even? Or do you think it's a slow start that we've seen paired with some minor injury stuff? Or like, do you think this shakes out where the top teams are going to be the top teams no matter what? Or do you think there is actual kind of parity throughout, you know, the top 10-ish teams on each side?
Yeah, well, I think it's more parity, but it's also helped for the most part with injuries. Because if you're looking at a team that is injury-free, the Lakers, you know, I know they've had their issues. LeBron's been in and out, has his issues. They're not going to be a ninth seed, right? They're not going to be 10-11. Denver without Jamal Murray is not in that spot. And so just looking at those two teams, and even, you know, we can say the Pelicans, who are 5-17. They haven't had Brandon Ingram for six straight games at one point, and then Zion for the whole year so far. So just looking at just the West in general, yes, I can say that there is parity, but it's also been helped out big time by the injury. So I do think we will look up at the end of the season, and you're going to see your big dogs, right? You're still going to see your Golden State, Phoenix, Utah, all going to be up there in the West. And the East, you're still going to see, you know, Brooklyn, Miami. I think you'll see Milwaukee keep climbing and climbing until they get to the top three seed as well. They're well on their way. So I think you'll see the top three seeds all be the normal people that you see. But after that, that's when you get into real parity, because I don't think the Lakers are going to recover enough to break the top three in the West.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because Embiid was out for the 76ers, you know, for health and safety protocols, and they have gone 2-8 the last 10. I mean, they were 8-2 before that. So,
right.
That's the kind of thing that we're still trying to adjust to, is the health and safety protocols versus, you know, is the team actually decent without said player? And I do think it will shake out. Obviously, it does every year, but it has been kind of interesting the first 20 games to see, because like we said at the beginning of the year, the Warriors, we thought were going to have a hot start. The Washington Wizards the same way. Washington Wizards kind of coming back to the pack a little bit, but the Warriors have just started out hot and have not stopped. And so that's what's going to be kind of interesting as we get into the next 20 games. We do predictions a little bit, but Cody, I do want to ask, what is the most interesting thing for you that you've noticed from these first 18 to 20 games for teams?
Well, as I mentioned before with the fouls, or, you know, there's more opportunity for some physicality in the defense.
Which kind of evens everything out. Maybe that's part of the parity discussion we were talking about. If you're able to be, you know, physical with some of these offensive players who just leaned on getting free throws, like James Harden, if he's shooting 2 for 15 that night, he can rely on getting 15 free throws to get him, you know, his 20 points still. I mean, continue with your thought. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. That was kind of my thought, but I was going to turn this around and ask, I have a question for you and I have a question for Daniel. You can both give an answer to the same question. With the more physical play coming back with perimeter defense and such, who do you see being the Bruce Bowen type that emerges from the NBA as this is, you know, kind of the style of play that we're going to see here a little bit more?
Well, I think this benefits teams like the Miami Heat, and especially with players like PJ Tucker, you know, the periphery guys who are defense only really, and then stand in the corner and try not to touch the ball on offense as, you know, as little as possible, go get me an offensive rebound. I think it benefits those kind of players, like guys like that are on the Knicks, which they have not been great defensively or offensively really. But you know, Tibbs is going to be able to figure something out with one of those guys. So I do think it makes a difference going forward with finding those guys who are very limited outside of defensive potential and defensive assignments. I think it does kind of heighten their importance a little bit. I don't know if it completely flips the script where it's like you have to have a Bruce Bowen on your team, but I think it is something that is helpful with this new change right away, for sure. Do you agree with that, Danny?
Yeah, I do. I think you can look at a team like Chicago, who is just kind of built to be a good team. Like, there's nobody on that team that, you know, that you would say, oh my God, they're a top 10 player in the league. And that's really what this style of NBA basketball is about, is more team basketball. And I think you can see that more, you know, across the league. And I, like you say, I don't know if you're going to be someone who's a lockdown defender, you know, like a Bruce Bowen, who can, you know, kind of shoot a little bit. And even, you know, someone who, you know, in Grizzlies in the Memphis area, you know, in Tony Allen, who is mainly all defense, and he can kind of hit a layup, you know, hopefully, you know, half the time. but it was, I don't think you're going to see that again. But if you want to talk about someone who can really get helped out from this, and I think that's like a player, you know, on Chicago, like DeMar DeRozan, who is really good and, you know, hustling and getting all the, you know, the loose balls, but also, you know, having that mid-range game. I think this is a style that really benefits him, because you kind of muck it up a little bit, and it's not going to be the, you know, the flashy, you know, you lean over and shoot, such as, like, you know, Trey Young style basketball. So I do agree that it is more the team basketball that's going to come back from that.
I do think that's a very interesting point, because, you know, I hadn't really thought or considered the ISO players who are prone to playing that physical style on offense, how that actually benefits them, right? So the players who are used to being able to play with hands off, like Trey Young, you know, other players like that, hate to just single out Trey, but he's the obvious candidate besides Harden. If you're a guy that had to be kind of hands off because you're more slight, not saying that James Harden is slight, but not in the least, if you're used to if you're used to the refs not allowing players to be physical with you, and you can't get off your normal shot without that, you know, that space or buffer that you need, that is a severe disadvantage, I think. And I think that plays right. Maybe that's why the Bulls have had such a strong start, and other teams like that, who they're kind of mid-range, you know, threes every once in a while player, but a guy who can play in the mid post, go ISO and be more physical and back down. Maybe that's why they've had more success. Maybe that's why, you know, Melo's not the same guy as he was, but he has that kind of bag, right? Where people can be physical with him and he's comfortable with that. So I think that is interesting to look forward, you know, kind of towards the end of the season. How will teams adjust, or will we just see a, you know, kind of outlier year from guys who were thought of as analytically like liabilities for their teams, like DeRozan was a couple years ago, where now all of a sudden it kind of shifts to him where defenses are more physical and you kind of have to throw him the ball and he can be physical with them. So that's an interesting point. I like that one for sure, Daniel. And that was a good question, because I like that one, because mine, the most interesting thing for me, and Daniel kind of alluded to earlier, is that is the East better than the West this year? Or is it just because of injuries to, you know, like the Nuggets? The Lakers have had their things. I mean, Suns and Warriors have been fine, and they're the top two teams in the league. But it seems like, you know, the kind of battle that we've had at the bottom from 4 to 8 is – like, it's everyone kind of in the same kind of record, sure, but they don't seem to be the same types of teams fighting it out that we used to see, right? Where they can go to the East and just dominate Eastern teams to kind of puff up their record a little bit to go to battle in the West. It seems like it's more of a nightly battle in the East. Is that something that you see, Cody, or do you think it's the West will be what the West usually is? Or do you think it's kind of a shift of power a little bit?
I think it's not so much a shift of power, but I think it's probably like an evening of power. Like, it's just like you said, like we kind of talked about parity a little bit earlier. Like, I think it's just more of that. You kind of take, I think, you know, we've talked about like rule changes and stuff like that, but I think a lot of those teams, you take away that being able to just like throw up your, you have one guy on the team that can just like every single play get to the line, and those teams kind of come back to earth a little bit, and those guys aren't as effective. And so you have a little bit more evenness between teams. And so you,
I mean, when we keep talking about the physicalness of the game, I mean, we usually associate that with the Western teams, like they're the most physical, the most bruising. But I mean, these Eastern Conference teams, you have, you know, Miami, the Wizards, Bucks, I mean, I probably wouldn't throw the Bulls in there as like an imposing physical team with Vucevic being their five, but Sixers, Hawks, Knicks. I mean, Knicks not right now, but you know that they'll get to that style eventually. I mean, the Cavs are playing three centers. Toronto, you know, playing all 6'8", you know, 6'10" combo wing guys. And Indiana, of course. I mean, that's like eight to 10 physical teams versus the West. So, Danny, do you think it's about the physicalness of it and the rule change that maybe has made the East look better than what they are?
No, I don't think it's all about that. I think it's really, there's been a lot of people that have left, you know, the Western Conference that has went out East, in all honesty. Mm. And I think that you're seeing a lot of these younger teams finally kind of coming together. And that's really the Knicks, who weren't supposed to be good last year. The Hawks, who were going to be okay, but they weren't supposed to be as good as they were. And now those two have kind of stabilized, in all honesty. So you talk about adding two, and then you had Kevin Durant, you know, go out, you know, to Brooklyn and, you know, pair with Kyrie. And then you had James Harden leave, you know, the Western Conference with the Rockets and go out there. So, you know, that is a lot of, you know, really what's changing is a lot of these top tier players have went out, and that's really, they're out in the East now. But I don't think that the East is, you know, just the strongest of the conferences. I think they're very even. I would probably put the top five in the West up against top five in the East. And I think you're really going to be close. I don't think you could hands down everybody, you know, be, you know, picking a winner out of that. And even if you went out to the top eight, I don't even know what the, you know, what the bottom of the Western Conference looks like right now, but you know, I would probably take, man, cause you have LA and Denver 9 and 10 out West. That just shows you that it's pretty stacked in both, in all honesty. So I think,
yeah,
you know, the top 10 in East and West, man, it'd be a coin flip of who would win if you just went, you know, kind of like the ACC and Big Ten, whatever, dude. They had like a matchup. Yeah. It would be fun, right? But it would, I don't know if you could pick a true winner. I don't think it'd be unanimous.
Interesting. Now let's get into some actual expectations that we have for some of these teams. Now, I'm going to start with teams that have actually exceeded your expectations. So, Cody, who for you is
the Bulls?
Team... Don't even have to think about it. You have the Bulls have by far exceeded your expectation. They're 13-8. Okay. Is it like, what is it about them? Did you expect them to be about 500, or are you just pleasantly surprised that they're 13-8?
They're five games over 500. What are you talking about 500? This is a team that I thought would be below 500.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah, they're good. I like it.
Interesting. Daniel, who's a team for you that exceeded expectations?
Well, I was going to say the Bulls, but you know what? I expect them to be fifth. They're fifth. That's where I had them, you know, so I'm not going to say them because I was correct.
Well, with the Bulls, but before you go onto your team, with the Bulls, maybe, you know, Cody, to continue on your conversation a little bit with the Bulls, I think we all thought that they'd be decent, but they wouldn't be good right away. Like, it would take some time for Billy Donovan to figure it out. Okay, I thought that. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm the only one in this room that thought that. You got, both of you thought they were going to be good right away.
I didn't think they would be good.
No, he said below 500.
100. Okay, so Daniel's the only one who thought they'd be good right away.
Correct.
There would be an adjustment period there. I'll rephrase it. I thought there would be an adjustment period with Billy Donovan, with Zach LaVine, you know, not shooting as much, with DeMar coming in, with Caruso, Lonzo, with Vucevic. And Vucevic been out for a lot of it. So I don't know. I guess that is the definition of exceeding expectations for you, Cody, because I thought there would be an adjustment period and they have been good right away and have beaten some teams that were surprising to me that they actually beat and they look competent. So I do want to add that about the Bulls, but who is the team that you were going to say, Dana?
I was going to say the Wizards. You know, okay, I had them pegged as my 10th overall out in the East. And we thought that they would play well early. And we even, you know, I think me and you had the two teams, or I'm sorry, we had the Wizards overall, and we broke down that they had a really good roster. They just did. They had a. I felt that they had a better roster than they had last year, but you didn't know what was going to happen. What was, you know, the drama behind Bradley Beal and what all that was going to bring. We didn't know Kyle Kuzma would just decide that he's going to be a, you know, top, I guess, a 10 rebound guy a night. Like, who would have thought that? So I thought they were going to be good. I thought they would hang on and still be fighting for a play-in spot, but I didn't think they'd be this good. So shout out to those guys, because they're playing really well right now, and they don't even have Rui Hachimura yet. So
yeah, and like, just looking at statistics, they have not really been shooting the ball well. Like,
no,
they're lower bottom, top bottom five maybe in 3-point shooting right now and effective field goal percentage. So they're 13-7, I believe, and it's without shooting the ball really well. So they're a team that's in an adjustment period, but they've just been like really scrappy. They all kind of do the same things, and they all won't plug in for each other and haven't had a full roster, and they're still at this. So
they play well at home.
That was a team that exceeded expectations for me for sure. Another one is the Cleveland Cavaliers for me personally. Now, I know they've been kind of falling off lately, but for the start that they have to be 10-10, I think that's exceeding expectation, because before that, you know, the past, 10 games, what? I think they're 4-6. So, I mean, they were an above 500 team, and things have kind of regressed a little bit with all the injuries they had, but I never would have thought three bigs would have worked, and it has. And that's probably a large credit to Evan Mobley being awesome as a rookie ready to go. But Jared Allen has played up to that contract. We made fun of it, $20 million a year for Jared Allen, but he's done his thing. He's been reliable for them. And Lauri Markkanen, we don't know what's going on with him, but it's worked. And it's been great to have Ricky Rubio back there just kind of anchoring things on the bench for them. And Darius Garland has been great. It's a bummer that they lost Colin Sexton for the rest of the year, I believe. So I don't know if they'll have a huge downturn, but I think they need to be a deserved shout out for exceeding expectations for the first 20 games.
Exceeding expectations, though? Like,
yeah,
they're playing well.
Did you think this would be a 500 team after 20 games?
I don't know if you heard me on the last podcast, but I said what I said.
And but through 15 games, he thought that.
Yeah, but not 20. And if you didn't hear me, let me go ahead and play it for you so you all remember.
Oh, so this won't catch up.
The fact that, to quote, since we're quoting everybody today, there's going to be a regression, right? And so this Cavaliers team, Cody, isn't going to get better. They're only going to get worse. And mark my words, December 1st, they will be 500 or worse.
Wow.
Whoa.
So a steep drop-off right away. Yeah, okay. We'll wait to see, because they have been a pleasant surprise for sure.
That was Daniel's impersonation of Skip Bayless.
Oh, what was that? I feel like Skip Bayless, who you said said I was about. Nothing like him, because I spoke the truth. So
nothing like
you
him. You're a Cowboys fan.
What is
he's that? A Cowboys
Listen,
fan.
I want to see your video of you crying and holding back tears.
That's at least that's the video similarity right there. You guys are just alike. You guys are both Cowboys fans. So you guys are,
what are
we? You guys are Cowboys fans. That says enough
winners.
About both of you.
Winners can do what they want.
All right. Now
I'm just saying, I was right about them. It's
You're
their
right.
schedule. They have played well, but their schedule has just been easy. And they now are hitting some of the tougher part of their schedule where they're going to be a 500 team. And so we'll see. What are they, 10-10 right now? Is that correct?
Yes.
So I'm either going to be right or wrong. They have one more game, I believe, until December 1st. So maybe they'll lose.
They play the team that's been underwhelming in the Mavericks. So decent shot, but I don't know the health, but yeah, you need the Mavs to have your prediction. Absolutely right. But teams on, kind of talking about the Mavs have been kind of underwhelming or disappointing. Let's go more disappointing. Ooh. So Cody, for you, who has been a team that has disappointed? I feel like we're all going to mention a team.
Lakers?
Lakers. There we go. Okay. So
but the Lakers problem isn't the injuries. It's that they signed Russell Westbrook.
Whoa.
Oh,
wow.
Elaborate. Why are you so down on Russell Westbrook's fit with them? Like, what do you think the plan for the Lakers was?
I just, you know, I can't imagine that Russell Westbrook is content to just stand out at the edge of the, you know, just stand and watch LeBron do his thing and then get involved when LeBron's ready to get him in. Like, Russell Westbrook is not J.R. Smith.
Yeah.
Wow.
Russell Westbrook is Russell Westbrook. Like, he's good. He can do things with basketball. He's not like a winner, really.
What?
But when has Russell Westbrook won any playoff stuff? Without Kevin Durant. When has he not lost? When has he not gotten bounced in the first round embarrassingly?
I'm not saying he's a good like postseason player, but he's good enough to win you games when LeBron's hurt. For sure.
Well, yeah. I mean,
is he?
Yes.
Well, then they should be better. But
this is how it always is. Anytime Russell Westbrook, who changes teams yearly now, right?
I'm not blaming him for it. I'm just saying that, like, that fit is bad anyway. So when those guys are all healthy, like, it's an even worse fit.
Yeah.
So when LeBron's back, like, How many people in the history of basketball like has LeBron changed his game for?
Nobody.
That is a great point.
That's why everybody sucks when they play with him.
Everyone has like been pretty good, then joined him, and then they're a shell of themselves.
Even when he went to Miami, like, did he change his game for Dwayne Wade? No. Dwayne Wade changed his game for LeBron.
Nobody has played with LeBron and not and has previously not been like a quote unquote superstar. Nobody has played with LeBron and gotten better and landed a huge contract after playing on a team with him. Nobody.
Kevin Love used to rebound 40 boards a game.
Kyrie's probably about the only one, but Kyrie he was a superstar when he got there. But Kyrie did leave him.
Right. But Kyrie left before he did. But what I'm saying is, like Kevin Love used to get like 20 boards a night, like now stands out at the 3-point line and like scratches his nuts while
he's coming off the bench for the Cavaliers.
Right.
But he's a bench player. Now that's probably due to age, but the past couple of years he's just withering away.
But since he went to Cleveland, that's exactly what he's done.
Yeah.
Since like 2014. LeBron was there. Okay, I need room in the paint to do work, so you need to clear out.
So who ultimately is at fault at this? Because obviously Lakers Twitter has immediately come to the conclusion that Frank Vogel needs to be fired. Wow. Frank Vogel is the problem to Lakers Nation. Woo. Is that ultimately is who to blame for this? Or is it the front office? Because I feel like the front office
has been constructed poorly. Who's good on their bench? They don't have like, I mean, I get that they got rid of like Lonzo and all those guys for Anthony Davis. Like, do that every fucking day. Like, but like,
well, no, they just let go of all those people for Westbrook.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm saying like do the thing for Anthony Davis like every day.
Yeah.
But then you lose like Kuzma and then you lose out and you let Alex Caruso go and you lose all those guys and you get Russell Westbrook back. Well, great. But now you don't have a bench. And you're paying Russell Westbrook all kinds of money. It's like, what is it, $34 million a year?
It's probably going to be more than that, more right? Than that. Is it close to 40?
I think it goes up every year.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not sure the exact numbers.
So it's ridiculous. You're paying him a ridiculous, like, bloated contract. You're paying LeBron, you know, LeBron money. You're paying Anthony Davis money. And, like, who else are you going to pay? You're paying Rondo and Dwight Howard. Like, what is that?
I do want to ask a kind of we talked about the rule change and all that kind of stuff with the importance on defensive players, you know, showing out this year. Like it's important to have physical defensive players, especially with Link. Do you think that maybe this is a little bit of they didn't foresee the rule change affecting them as much? Because obviously the biggest thing for the Lakers that you just said going into the offseason was shooting, right? And
health,
but you can't trade for that. Right. But maybe that's what they did with Russell since he's usually pretty durable for the most part. But do you think it's just a do you think it's just a misplay or a misread by them on how the rule change would affect them? Because it seems like shooting is preeminent now, and not everyone, you know, last year the Clippers were shooting 41%+ from three. That the closest team to that this year so far is 37% with the Hornets, and it changes every week. Believe me, I've been tracking it for the past couple weeks. So shooting as is preeminent right now, and there is more importance on those defensive players. So do you think it's just they misplayed their hand on predicting what this rule change would, how it would actually affect them? And they built the team according to how they thought it would be, but they got it wrong on what the actual outcome was. Is that a possibility?
I mean, maybe, but it's not like anyone was like, oh, they changed the rules, we're going to stop shooting threes now.
Yeah.
Like shooting was a problem, has been a problem for them.
Yeah, I agree. Like, yeah, I don't think it's anything to do with that. I think it's just a badly constructed team, in all honesty, because look at them tonight. And this is playing in the present time. Avery Bradley, who should not have been playing. I don't even remember where he was, but he was not going to make the team. And he ended up not making the team and got signed by the Lakers. So I don't know where he was. I just tried to look and I didn't do it fast enough. But that just shows you he's starting for them tonight. And then DeAndre Jordan, who was not good. He was bad in Brooklyn. And pretty much the only reason he had a contract was because of Kyrie and KD. And they finally said, if we're going to be better, if we're going to be as good as we want to be, we had to get away from him, because he's not good and he's starting for them. That's their issues. And I know Carmelo's been great, but we're talking about Carmelo Anthony, who's getting up there in age as well. I think the issue is LeBron. He decided that he's going to get people, because he pretty much runs this team, and who he likes and people who he thinks it would just kind of understand and be a vet and play with him and understand his game. And that really, sometimes that just doesn't work. And you're letting LeBron run the team. And then in the end, I think that's what's going to bite him in the butt a little bit.
Interesting. Yeah, maybe it's they were trying to predict what the outcome was. That's why they went super old and super vet heavy, because they thought they would have the savvy or what. Or maybe it's just truly trying to fit things around those three albatross contracts. I don't know.
I think they're just trying to grab guys.
They're just trying to grab guys that were names that they thought would make sense.
And they were just trying to grab guys they could get to sign the dotted line for the amount of money they had left over. Like, that's
it's true. It's not 2015 for
like
all
they would have signed Shane Battier up if they could have. Like,
you make a shot.
Yeah. So a team that's actually been disappointing for me, and relative to where they are right now, that is the Indiana Pacers for me. And you know, under 500, I thought they'd be better. I would have thought they would have been at least 500. You know, there was all this stock, you know, Rick Carlisle coming in. Oh, they're getting a great Hall of Fame coach who knows what he's doing, you know, analytically forward. Look what he did with Luka and them. Like, they almost beat the Clippers and back-to-back playoffs, blah, blah, blah. And they have had actual, like, just complete letdown dud games that don't make sense. So I think it's starting to get a point with this that the roster just does not work. And, you know, maybe Carlisle needs another 20 games to kind of see if he can flesh it out. I know they've had injuries and all that kind of stuff, but this is what, year three with this core, with, you know, Sabonis and Turner and Brogdon. Like, is it just because Sabonis and Turner aren't those guys? Like, I don't know. Like, they got rid of Brogdon and the Bucks all of a sudden had Drew Holiday. They win the NBA championship, you know? Right. And I've always really liked Brogdon. I thought he's a good player. I think Sabonis and Turner are good players too, but maybe this is getting to a point where it's time to shake it up. Like, this is just not going to work. That is a team for me that has been disappointing. I don't know if you have Pacers thoughts, but
I do. So they were going to be, I had two that I was going with, and I was hoping, you know, you didn't take both of them as y'all spoke, but the Pacers was one of my two. And I'm glad we're hitting them because they were a team that I thought that was going to be really good. I even predicted that Sabonis could have a MVP level season this year because Sabonis is that good. The issue with this team is they're as good as Sabonis is. So if he has a bad game, they look horrible. And I think this team needs to be constructed in a different way. I think they're just going to have to embrace going smaller because, you know, who's on this team, you know, does not make sense. I don't know why they need Turner, you know, next to Sabonis, but I think if they could get off of him, they would be better off as having a Sabonis as really your five. And I know that is a little undersized at times, but if you're undersized, you can bring, you can have a big that plays a little bit bigger on the bench and use him as needed. But I would go smaller with this team and I would get up and down the floor a lot easier. And that way, you know, you can kind of, you know, make an offense kind of created a kind of a flowier offense than what they have. They feel like it's, it's too much like, I don't know, like you're clinking the thing that you're spinning the wheel and it just goes around and around and just nothing's happening. It's just like little intersections. So it's just stupid. It just seems clunky is what it is. So
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah. What's another team you had? You said you had two. What was the other one?
So the other team I had was the Pelicans, and we know they have not looked good at all. And I think it's really, I really think it's a bad fit. And we talked JV going down there next to Zion. We have not seen it. But also, are they that bad if Zion doesn't play? I honestly think the answer is yes, because Zion does so much for them. The rest of their team, their roster, is not well constructed. And I think it's just bits and pieces put together. And now they've signed JV to a 2-year extension, which is great for JV. But does he really fit their style? I think they're just spinning their wheels, and I think they're actually taking a step back because Brandon Ingram isn't who they thought he was, in all honesty. Zion can't get healthy. This team doesn't play well if they don't have both of those guys, as we have seen. So I think they're taking a big step back for the future overall on the Pelicans.
Yeah, you want to talk about people that have gotten worse after leaving LeBron? Talk about David Griffin. Yeesh.
Yeah.
He was going to be the savior of the Pelicans franchise, and yikes.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you have him scheduled, Cody, for a piano solo or a piano lesson, but
up in his room later.
He'll probably come see you if you want. Now, but let's get into some players before we get into our final second quarter predictions. I do just want to mention, you know, one player that you have enjoyed starting out of the gates can be anybody you want in this world. Wow. But somebody who's surprised you or have enjoyed personally watching. So Cody, we'll keep this kind of order going. Who's a player for you that you've enjoyed for the first 20 games?
You know, the player that I've enjoyed that isn't really a surprise to anyone has been a young man by the name of Steph Curry.
Wardell.
That guy, man. Just Steph, the way.
Not Steph, right?
Yeah, Steph, not Seth. Okay. Seth Curry is a revelation in his own right. But Steph Curry, just the things that guy does with the basketball. It's what I imagine watching Mozart conduct an orchestra would be like. But you know, Mozart was deaf. No, Beethoven was deaf, I think.
What?
One of them was deaf. So it would be like watching Beethoven conduct an orchestra. I think he was a deaf one. What? But if you could hear.
I
That's
have
how
question.
Good Steph is at basketball.
I have a question. That I've been kind of holding on to that I wanted to save, which I'll bring up for now since we're doing first quarter predictions. But since the Warriors won that first championship, LeBron has long held by everybody the moniker of best player in the league since basically he came into the league. Right now, everybody? I'm sure there'll be some debate, you know, Kobe for that little stretch in the mid 2000s and, but I think most people who are, you know, LeBron people would say he was the best player from 2004, 2005 to even now.
From 2004? From his first year in the
his second year.
Oh
his
my
second year in the league.
God.
You, look, this is what they would say, right?
You make me sick.
They all point to the career statistics of this argument, right?
That is ridiculous.
But here's the thing. Since that first Warriors championship, should we have actually been saying that Steph Curry was the best player in the NBA?
That's a good question, because
we've had debates where it was Kevin Durant versus LeBron.
Yeah.
Where we see what it's like with Steph.
I think the KD and LeBron thing was pretty like clear. Like they went like toe to toe on the actual basketball court playing the same position, and Kevin Durant won that one.
But would you look at that Warriors team as being a Kevin Durant led Warriors team or a Steph Curry led Warriors team?
Kevin Durant.
Really? You would say KD yep. was leading those Warriors teams when he was
there. I would, because 100%. Steph is a player that like does whatever the team needs to so that they can win.
Correct.
And okay. also I would say this. I would say that those were KD led teams, like nominally. Like were the they? Real nominally.
Nominally.
But the real but like because of the way that Steph is and the way that he like operates and like does things, like Steph is like the leader of that team. Like he's obviously comfortable yeah. enough knowing that it's his team to be like, get your point, you know, be the finals MVP, Kevin. I don't care. Like, get buckets. Like, do you? We're winning championships. I'll go set screens and run off the ball and like do all this stuff. And like that's why I think, you know, Steph is great.
Well, yeah, Steph's great. This is why I bring it up, because, you know, I think their first title is 2014-2015 season. So for the past 6 years, I mean, they had that, you know, injury season and where they were terrible and he was out too. But we just see his effect on that team mm-hmm. and to win what? 3 championships or whatever it was, 4 championships during that span. Should we have been saying for the past 6 years that it has in fact been Steph Curry's league, not LeBron or Kevin Durant's? Is that psycho, Daniel?
I wouldn't say it's psycho, but it would be wrong.
You think it's wrong? Okay.
Yes, because I think Kevin Durant, when, you know, kind of has shown, he's went to a team with, you know, Steph, and he was the main reason that they, you know, won a lot of times. Yes, the offense looked great. Steph is a great shooter. But when it came down to it, who was taking the shots? It was KD. And so he went to Steph's team and was better overall at taking the big shots. And now he's went out to Brooklyn, and he's even on a team that doesn't have one of their top 3 guys, the trio. It's just him and another guy with, you know, putting out contracts around those. As you can tell, it's very tough when you have 3 kind of top heavy contracts. So when you don't have one playing at all, such as you're seeing in LA with LeBron, has kind of been hit or miss. It's tough because you're hampered by the rest of the contract. So I just think that KD, it's been his league. And I think you're seeing now a little bit of Giannis coming up, because Giannis has been so big. But over the past 6 or so years, I think it has been, for the most part, LeBron's, because he's been the player pushing the narrative. It's just he's getting older, and if he doesn't have the right pieces around him, then I think it's going to be tough for him to win. He won in a bubble, which is fine. It was tough to win, but it wasn't the same style. It wasn't the same type of season. So – yeah. I really don't think he could do it again. I think LeBron's championship days are done.
Yeah, I've just started to come around recently to the idea of just looking back at this as, you know, Steph was always kind of the outside. Like it was always KD, LeBron, KD, LeBron, KD, LeBron. And to me, I'm starting to just start to feel that maybe when I look back on this, for the past 5 or 6 years, maybe Steph Curry's been the best player in the NBA. And that's just kind of, you know, I know that's been a tangent to what we're talking about, but it's just something I wanted to bring up because I have been thinking of it recently, but need to do more research and all that stuff. And I know it's hard to do with comparative and LeBron, everyone who argues for LeBron, everything's about overwhelming stats, right? And so they're always going to win the statistical categories, and they use that as their basis for everything. But,
yeah,
you know, stats are stats. That's why they like them, because they're concrete numbers. And that's the argument of fact.
That game where J.R. Smith didn't know the score is the single greatest performance, like single game performance I've ever seen from a human being. And it came from LeBron that night.
That's totally fair.
I watched totally it in fair. Your living room.
That's totally fair. But I would go to the consistency of what Steph and them did.
Yeah, for sure.
All the time to just bend the defense the way he does for 6 years straight. And no one had an answer for it yet.
I mean, you could also say the same about LeBron.
It's fair. It's a totally fair point. Player I have, I have a bunch of guys that are kind of like honorable mention for me, but a guy that I've been surprised by, even though they're on a bad team. But this is a guy I'd given up on. It's Deontay Murray from the Spurs. I mean, he's averaging right at 19 points, 8 rebounds, 8 assists right now. And he took a step that I wasn't sure he was capable of doing. Now, the Spurs suck. They're not going to be good. And I get it. It's good stats on a bad team. But I just never thought he was going to get there from what we saw from his first couple of years. But he's been a pest on defense, and he's been their best player on offense and most consistent. So I know it's not saying much for a 5-13 team or whatever they are, 5-14 team. But Deontay Murray is a guy that I've been pleasantly surprised by, just because I didn't think he was ever going to get there. So, Daniel, you get to lead off last again. Who's the guy for you?
Yep. So I have, and I'm going to kind of be bad against the system, but I have two guys. And the reason I have two is because I enjoy watching them both. And one is a homer pick and the other is not a homer pick. So I kind of had to throw that in. But Ja, who's averaging, who just got hurt, unfortunately, and having an all-star season, but averaging 24-5-7, which is, you know, just crazy that he's up there on that level. And he's going to continue to, you know, just keep pushing that to the next level, to where he is talked to be an all-star for the future. And I think this year he will be an all-star with, you know, hopefully just a small knee sprain in the end where he can kind of get back on. But another guy I love is Anthony Edwards. And I was a huge doubter from the very beginning because really what his, you know, his interviews and everything he talked about, he wasn't a basketball player. He wasn't that dude. And he's now showing that he is the main dude in Minnesota. And he's averaging, you know, 22 points, 6.6 rebounds and 3.5 assists. Like,
yeah,
he's shooting the ball so well. And those stats probably don't even do his whole year justice because of how well he's played as of late. The Minnesota Timberwolves are bouncing back. They're now, you know, 500 because of him mainly. So I have to give a shout out to him. What?
500.
We're from the deep South, boy.
Yeah, bro.
Anthony Edwards. I mean, he's already had a couple posters erased for charge calls. And another one the other night was
stupid.
Awesome.
Very suspect.
But other I'll just give out some honorable mentions here. Miles Bridges in a contract year doing his thing. He's trying to get that money.
Yep.
Cole Anthony, I think it's been kind of fun, even though it is on a bad team. Nikola Jokic, who just an unfortunate situation, is still dominating. I mean, 26 points, 14 rebounds. He's only at 6 assists because the team can't shoot worth crap. If that team could shoot like they did last year, then he'd be at 10 or 11 assists again. And finally, it's Jordan Poole. I think Jordan Poole deserves an honorable mention for what he's done the first 20 games. He has been an absolute delight for Warriors fans and NBA fans alike, and we can't wait to see Klay come back mixed with that. So,
Jokic, his brothers have been making a lot of headlines.
Hey, game that is much anticipated. You see the whole Udonis
Haslam said, don't come to my city and start some
Yeah, okay. Good luck with that, Udonis. Yeah. You know, I don't even think Udonis wipes his own butt anymore. He's that old. But this gets us into our final thing. I know we went a little long. I was thinking about keeping this one short, but I enjoyed the conversation, so we ran a little late.
You're welcome, people.
You get all the content you need, just like how you ate on Thanksgiving. Way too much. That's what this episode is for you. So just a little dessert for you.
Yeah, I'm the pecan pie.
For the
Nobody likes pecan pie.
Second quarter, the next 20 or so games for this NBA season. What is one big prediction that you have for this next 20 games? Cody, you've been lucky to go first most of the evening. What would be a prediction that you would have unfold in the next 20 games?
Yeah, the Detroit Pistons will continue to be poor.
Just like your bets. Minus 10,000.
Yes. Virtually can't lose on any of them, and Pistons virtually can't win, basically. Yep. So the Pistons are still going to be terrible. That's fine. My prediction for the next 20 games is the Bucks, who have won 7 in a row. I think this will continue. I'm not sure when Brook Lopez is supposed to come back, but they signed Boogie Cousins. I actually don't like that sign. I think Boogie Cousins is washed. Yeah. I don't think he's going to help them at all.
No, his attitude is better, and he's in the best shape of his life.
He fixed it. Okay,
I saw an Instagram video of him shooting threes.
Yeah, he's washed. I hated the signing, but I guess if they need another bruising body behind Portis, that's what they're thinking is. I don't know.
They just signed 5 fouls. 6 fouls.
They got that man. They got him after Thanksgiving. Like, that's not good. He's not in good shape. He just healed a Thanksgiving dinner.
He hadn't even finished the sweet potatoes yet. He got grease. He got butter on the contract.
That was actually a signature. He
My man was chowing down on a roll as he signed it.
Oh, Boogie. It's too bad you got injured, buddy. But I think the Bucks will continue to ascend as they get healthier and get everything going. I think by the end of the next 20 games, they'll be the number one seed in the East. And I see them sitting at the top of the East after the next 20 games. Which, Daniel, you get to finish us out here with predictions. What do you see in the next 20 games?
I'm going to go with a Cody style. And I'm going to say the Phoenix Suns will lose a game.
That's a good one.
They've won 16 in a row, baby. They're ready to lose a game.
What a call. So you don't see them winning 35 in a row.
You know, I just don't see it, but it could. But I'm going to say they lose a game. I think we look at the conferences now, and I'm going to mainly use the West, and I'm going to say that those bottom 5 teams that are not in the playoffs, I think it's going to stay the same. I don't think any one of those 5 teams will somewhat jump up and do anything. And so I think that those 5 teams are set for the rest of the year. And that's depressing for those bottom 5 teams. And that's Sacramento, the Thunder, Spurs, Pelicans, and the Rockets. Those 5 are just set in the bottom. And I think for the next 20 games, I don't think you'll see them make a move. And at that point, they're pretty much done for the year.
Wow. 20 games in and they're already done. I don't disagree with you at all.
I do have a fun one, though.
Show me nothing, though. I have
a fun one. I thought long and hard about this. I just didn't know how to preface it. I didn't know how to kind of end it. But I think that Ben Simmons gets traded in these next 20 games.
Oh, okay.
And that's a spicy one. Because I do believe that the 76ers are going to get a little frustrated. And I know they've been a little frustrated so far. Embiid's been out a lot, but I think that they're going to have to make a move. And one of these teams, whether it's the Blazers or someone, will have to make a move and say, hey, we want to not get too far behind the eight ball and go ahead and push forward. So I think he gets traded.
So to me, it gets traded because there's a team that should be in the playoffs starts panicking.
Correct.
So who is like a panic? Like, do you have a panic team candidate? Like, obviously, I said before with the trade that didn't work with the Nuggets.
Yeah.
Obviously, they would love to have a warm, healthy body right now.
Yeah.
But who's a realistic team for you that is a panic trade candidate?
Yeah, I think it's the Blazers. I just said them. But I think CJ McCollum would fit very well alongside Embiid. I had another shooter. And good defensively as well. At times, just a little smaller, undersized, but I think he would be a very good fit there. And how would you not want, a pick and roll with Ben Simmons and Lillard? It would be really good. And I think both teams would actually be better off because of it. So I think they have to make a decision, because if let's say they're, you know, 15 and 15, both the teams, you know, midway, you know, 30 games in the season. I think it's time to make a decision at that point, because what's going to change, right? As long as there's no injuries, what's going to change? What I see both those teams finally making a decision, like, we need to do something now.
Mm, I like it. Okay. Well, this is going to be a super fun 20 games coming up. We've really, as you all heard, we really enjoyed the first 20 games. So thank you guys once again for joining us for another episode of Free Basketball. Hope you enjoyed getting back to work after your couple days off vacation. But make sure you follow us here at Free Basketball. Remember, best bets are now on Bet the Lead. So follow them on Twitter. Like Daniel said, I've had a good couple days. So that means I'm going to have a terrible week. So maybe you should wait a week to follow. But I believe I'm like 9-2 or something like that the past 3 or 4 days. So doing all right. Cody, we might have to post Cody's play just out of, you know, loyalty to Cody being on Bet the Lead. So whatever minus 800 favorite you got, Cody, just text me afterwards.
I will.
It's still got, we'll call it like the Cody special, yeah, or something like that.
If you got money just to put call on
it,
the team.
Call it Money in the Bank. That's
it's
what you
Money
call
in
it.
The Bank. It's Bet the Lead, Money in the Bank. You can't lose. I like it. It will be up on Bet the Lead's play card tomorrow. But anything to shout out before you go, Cody?
Nah, just, you know, keep getting them checks when you bet the leads, Money in the Bank bet.
They know anything to plug?
Yeah, if you like a lot of our content, make sure you go over there. But a lot of fun things happening with the Lead. You can follow them at the Lead SM. There's also content, whatever team you like, just go over to their website. It's theleadsm.com. And then you can follow me at Daniel Greer.
All right, that wraps us up for this week. Make sure you like, subscribe, rate, review, join the Lead Podcast Network every day of the week. Come tune in to every great episode that all these other fantastic shows are putting out. We will see you guys next Monday. Let's have a good week.